now stay tuned for Straight Talk, the show where social justice meets criminal law. Brought to you on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Now here's your host, Andre Hakes.
Good morning, Charlottesville. You are listening to Straight Talk on WPVC-FM, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Straight Talk is a series of interviews and conversations about legal and social justice issues affecting our community. I am your host, Andre Hakes. On today's show, we'll be talking with Kent Williamson, who is founder of Paladin Media Group and Paladin Pictures, about a new film directed by him called Stained Glass Rainbows. Welcome, Kent.
Thank you very much for having me on today, Andre.
So tell me a little bit about what you do at Paladin, just to begin with, how that got started.
Okay, well, Paladin is a company that I started, goodness gracious, originally back in 1991. On paper, okay, mm-hmm. we were formal, you know, had like the slip from the county that said we're a business. That was back in Texas. I kind of moved around, freelance under the name for a while. I landed in Charlottesville in 95, produced for the University of Virginia for a number of years.
Cool.
And at that time, I was kind of laying the groundwork for the company, and then finally made the leap into it full-time 2002.
Okie doke.
And we do all kinds of film and video production. You know, the kind of the backbone of our company is educational film, which is a little different than making documentaries and features and things like that. But that's kind of where that's the bread and butter.
You don't like make the films that kids watch in health class about how babies
no,
are made?
We haven't
no,
made
okay,
any of those yet. But you never know what's coming through the door.
Anything could happen.
Exactly. So so we do a good bit of work for a number of different clients in the region, but we also do, we have clients that are national. And so we travel wherever the work is. We've filmed as far away as Cambodia and Vietnam and Uganda and places like that, China. And so we travel, you know, around the globe wherever clients need us.
And you're based in Charlottesville.
We are.
How
we
big
are.
Is your company?
It's a small company. There's right now, I think there's probably five or six of us there. We just lost an employee yesterday that's moving back to Texas. And so we're going to miss her. But you know, it's that like kind of the accordion effect that happens with a small business. A little bit, you grow a little bit, you shrink a little bit.
Sure, but how cool that you've been able to make this go and that you've got, you know, you're a small business owner in Charlottesville.
We have some thank you. Thank you for supporting small businesses in Charlottesville. you know, we have some great clients. We have, and there's such a talented pool of filmmakers in this area that we can rely on, because we hire freelancers on occasion for different projects that we need. We have a couple freelancers coming in for a project we're doing in Stanton on Tuesday, covering a C-SPAN event, actually. So we do some of that, you know, where we go out and we cover different events for organizations like C-SPAN and different companies. But so there's that type of work that we do. We also do transfers. We take old media, mm-hmm. turn it into new media. Mm-hmm. So people have like an old 8mm film or an old 16mm film print that they found in grandpa's attic, you know, and they'll bring it to us and we'll put it onto DVD or hard drive for them.
Oh, that's great. Where are you guys located in Charlottesville?
We're over on the in Berkmar Crossing Complex, which is the corner of Berkmar and Ryo.
Oh, so you're really close to my office. My office is over on Ryo West.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
So we're neighbors.
And the facility that you have there, is it consumer friendly? Can somebody just walk in off the street with their movie from grandma?
Exactly. We have walk-ins all the time that come through that need that type of service. And so we do that kind of thing, the transfer. That's just kind of our public interface with the consumer out in Charlottesville. And then we also do the documentaries and feature films that we produce. And those are fewer and farther between because they take more time and money to create. But we have we currently have four titles that we've produced. And this recent one, Stained Glass Rainbows, is a definitely an interesting one.
So tell me about list me the four titles of the documentaries and feature films.
Okay, so our first film is a dramatic feature called When Love Walks In. Mm-hmm. It's a story about a guy whose wife is killed in an accident and he's left to pick up the pieces and try to put his life back together. He's trying to raise his little girl and basically bring some semblance of normalcy back, and in the process he falls in love again. So it's a kind of a light romantic comedy type of a film.
Cool.
That deals with some serious elements as well. But the next film that I produced was a documentary called Rebellion of Thought. Rebellion of Thought is a film about postmodernism and its effect on our culture. The subtitle of the film, and it's you know, what would be considered by some a faith-based film, but it has broader implications than that as well. But the subtitle is the postmodernism, the church, and the struggle for authentic faith. And that's what I found, and what I spend a lot of my life trying to do is live out my faith authentically, not just being a show up in a building at 11 o'clock on Sunday kind of a person, but really something that permeates who I am and how I live and how I treat other people and how I approach my projects and how I treat customers that come to my business. And it's very, I try to be very integrated that way in my life, you know,
right.
Not compartmentalized.
So what's number three?
Number three is a film called, well, this was actually started before the other one. Okay, Stained Glass Rainbows was started before By War and By God.
Okay.
But By War and By God is currently, we're pushing them both out right now. Actually, it'll be the fourth release. It's not officially released yet, which this Stained Glass Rainbows is. So By War and By God is a film about a group of Vietnam vets who all survive the hell of war, and they go back to Vietnam to love and care for the people of that country. And so they take American doctors and that travel with them, and they go into the poorest of the poor areas of Vietnam, and they bring health care to the people. They'll build clinics. They do all. It's a pretty amazing group of these veterans that have taken, you know, they've taken something as awful as war, and something good has come out of it. And I see that as just, I love redemptive kind of stories where there's something good comes out of something bad. And that to me is a beautiful example of one of those redemptive stories.
And something good coming out of something bad makes a nice segue into Stained Glass Rainbows. Tell me about this film. That's mostly the film I want to talk
about. Yeah. Stained Glass Rainbows. It's a little controversial, as you might imagine.
Just slightly.
Stained Glass Rainbows explores the collision between homosexuality and Christianity. Okay.
That's a big bang you got going there.
Yeah, and it's a mess, you know. It's a mess, honestly. It's like, as I explored this, and you know, it's the farther I got into it, the more messy it seemed to become. So, let me back up just a little bit. Well, first, let me say, you know, I look at that issue as a raging bonfire within church culture. And what I've done in the film is I've tried to go all the way around that bonfire, circling the bonfire, talking to people on all different sides from all different perspectives, excuse me, and bringing their voices together and weaving it into this story called Stained Glass Rainbows. So here I am. I'm a straight guy. I've got six kids. I haven't had any, you know, real connection other than an incident that's described in the film. My only connection to the homosexual community growing up was that incident that was described to me, okay?
That's not the homosexual community, by
the
way.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry.
Just so
yeah, you're
know.
Right. Okay. Experience. Maybe that's a better term for it. My only connection. So I grew up, little background, very conservative Christian upbringing, okay?
Right.
I was the guy that was making all of the gay jokes in junior high, high school, okay, that was me.
You sit on my lesbian
and
radio show.
And here I sit on your lesbian radio show. Imagine
and now we're going to be nice to each other.
And we're going to be friendly and cordial, right? It's amazing. But that's who I was. I was the one that was kicking gays and lesbians to the curb.
Right.
Okay. So that I speak of that's part of the testimony of my life, of mm-hmm. what I've seen God do in my life, of a transition, of a change that has been made. And it started, let me back up to the first moment where I knew that this film was going to happen. I was finishing Rebellion of Thought. I needed a few seconds of footage of a gay pride parade.
Okay.
I wouldn't have dared go to anything like that. You know, never in my life had I been to any event such as that, and I had plenty of reasons why not to. But I needed footage.
And what year was this?
This would have been, goodness gracious, this would have been the summer of 2007.
Okay. So not that long ago.
Well, almost a decade now, you know, when you think about it.
But, okay, all right, I'm old.
So,
go ahead.
So it's like, man, I'm getting gray, you know, while we sit here. It's like, I just keep aging. No, but So in 2007, I just need a few seconds of footage. So here's where my heart was at the time. I knew I had to go get this footage. I was going to see Sinners. Okay. That's what I was going to do at that event.
Let me go get this video footage of sinners.
Right. Okay. So
that's what you're thinking.
That's my heart.
All right.
Okay. That's my heart.
All right. And to what gay pride parade did your heart take you?
The Washington, D.C.
In 2007. And that's where the footage is that's in this.
And that's the footage that went into Rebellion of Thought, the 7 seconds that I needed.
Okay.
But that's the moment when I'm standing there. Okay, so I go there. I'm looking through. It's weird as a filmmaker when you're actually in a documentary sense, you're looking through the camera. You distance yourself. You're looking through a viewfinder. It's almost like you're watching it on TV. You're
right.
Going and you're getting the angles that you need.
You're framing your shot.
Exactly. And so here I am pointing my camera at sinners, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I have this sense in my spirit. And this voice says to me, if you want to see a sinner, look in the mirror.
Whoa, that's heavy.
Okay. So it was that moment when I realized that I was really looking at people that are not that too much unlike myself,
mm-hmm.
perhaps have a different orientation, that when I look at from my faith perspective of being realizing that I am the guilty one, I am the sinner, okay? So in one sense, instead of being high up on my mighty horse of look at me and how unsinful I am, where then I was able to look down on everybody and point out all the sinners because I could see them and spot them, you know? And it was that moment that I realized it was a very defining moment for me that I couldn't live that way anymore. And I knew that day that I was going to make this film. And so it was a very, very profound time in my life. And it's like, again, it's like, okay, now how am I going to make this film?
Right.
I don't have any connections to this world. I don't have any, you know, if you normally, like, especially on Facebook now, if you go through your friends list, you're probably going to find a gay person or a lesbian person in your friends list somewhere, you know, even some of the most conservative.
I might have one or two.
You might,
maybe
a couple. So
I probably have a few conservative Christians on my friend.
You might
find one or two.
I might become one.
It could happen.
We got to make that friend connection there. So anyway, in that day, it was like I got back on the subway because I had parked out and taken the subway in, and I hopped on the subway and was heading back out in my car, and I just started writing down stuff as fast as I could that really was laying the framework for this film that I was going to make. When you make a documentary, you don't know the story until you get in the edit suite and you discover the story, okay? You know the topic. I didn't go into this film, and I try not to approach any film with the preconceived ideas of what the film is going to be, unless it's a dramatic film. You know,
right.
The nice thing about When Love Walks In, you have a script, you go out and you film all the scenes, you bring it together, it's easy to cut together, you know the story. In a documentary, the story reveals itself, and every interview that you have with someone, it's like peeling back another layer of the onion, this complicated thing of homosexuality and faith and what it looks like and what, you know, how it shapes itself in different people's lives. And so just starting, you know, you talk to this person and you peel this back and you talk to this other person and, oh, it reveals something totally different. And so in the process of talking to people, you know, going around the bonfire, I talk to a lesbian minister.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I never would have even known how. I never would have had that person to think about connecting with.
Mm-hmm.
But so, you know, you research it, you uncover it, you find, okay, this would be a good person. She was, at the time, she was the head of the Metropolitan Community Churches. Her name's Cindy Love, Reverend Dr. Cindy Love.
And she figures very prominently in your film.
She does. And really, you know, what I tried to do in the film is let these different voices speak for themselves. We all have opinions about this topic, you know. Everyone comes in with their own preconceived ideas and notions that they have of what they think is right or wrong. You don't need to sit and watch a film for an hour and a half of me telling you what I think.
Right.
I'd rather have you hear what these other people think, because they're the ones with the life experience of, you know, of their own journeys, you know? And every one of those people that I interviewed, I see them each as having a valid journey, okay? And that's the type of respect that I went in to the interviews with and to the editing with, of really trying to let voices be heard. There are voices in the film. When, you know, I'm sure as you watch the film, you probably saw people that you wholeheartedly agree with, and you probably saw people that you didn't agree with at all.
Actually, I didn't see a whole lot of people I wholeheartedly agreed with.
But, oh, really?
I saw people with whom I felt more and less sympathy.
Right. Okay. Yes. Okay. That's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it. And obviously, you know, a person's faith background that they bring to the film and watching it is going to impact that, you know. And so I think that sympathy is perhaps a good word, you know. When I spent a day with the Westboro Baptist Church folks, okay,
it's the God hates fags people.
That's them. Yes, and I'm glad you said it. I didn't have to, right? but that group that, and that's what they're known for. They go around, they protest everywhere. And as the God hates fags people,
they're kind of the God hates everybody people.
You have got it. I said they have a website. I think it's like God hates Swedes.
God hates you. God hates American soldiers. God hates
yeah,
fags.
But the Swedes.
God
it's like
probably
come
hates
on.
Macaroni and cheese.
I'm sure. I mean, sure. But you know, even getting a chance to spend, I certainly do not condone or approve what they're doing in terms of. I don't think that they're making a great. I think perhaps they're having a negative impact instead of a positive impact.
I think okay? They've been wonderful for the gay community.
Well, that's the thing.
They and, are, you know, some of the success of the change in social ideas yeah. about gays and lesbians, I think, is due to the offensiveness of Fred Phelps.
Right, right. And that's what Dr. Robert Gagnon in the film, he points it out. He's like, I wish these people would just go away because they're doing more harm than good.
Oh,
you know?
I think we should and have seen more of
see
them.
See more of them, right.
I remember going to some of the pride events, you know, the parades and things, marches, really. I guess they were more in those days in D.C., I think we're talking earlier than the 2007. I think we may have been at that one too, but I remember seeing those people on the street and, you know, the first time I encountered them and just being horrified by them, just absolutely horrified by them and hoping that no one would start a fight with them.
Right. Right. Well, in the film, we have the guy with the bullhorn. He's not from the Westboro Baptist Church.
Right.
He's somebody else that I think they're out of Pennsylvania or somewhere. And he showed up for the parade and, you know, he spent his time yelling and preaching and screaming and having a, you know, this kind of close to a street brawl with you know, him and his buddy, and there's probably 50 people from the gay pride parade that are packed around him, and
that's
they're yelling
opening.
Back and forth.
That's
and,
the merely the opening yeah, scene of the yeah. film, and I think it really captures the ugliness of yeah. a particular era and of that particular fight. I mean, that is a nasty scene.
Yeah, and that's that to me is so. That's kind of like when you apply, you take that scene and you apply it to broader culture, and you have, you know, oftentimes it's the conservative Christians that are yelling, you know, that they may not say, I hate you.
No, they say, but God hates you.
But they're, but well, that, well, the certainly the Westboro Baptist Church.
Oh, no, but, that guy said it too. I mean, when you talk to him later,
yeah,
that, you're
yeah,
like,
he did. He did,
says,
yes.
Well,
but the other
God
people in the film,
them.
The other Christians in the film wouldn't say that. You know, you look at that theologian, he talks from a viewpoint of love and that it's not hate, you know, that it's not, that they're not trying to.
Well, I don't think he talked from
hate.
A viewpoint of love. I think if he talked from a viewpoint of theology and it was a very rational argument mm-hmm. within the framework of theology,
right,
that I didn't
right.
feel like he talked from a viewpoint of love at all.
Right. Well, yeah, that may be your
I don't think
you know,
that's quite fair.
But
I found his argument interesting.
What he said, he said a line in the film, and I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, but he says, when he talks about it, he wishes that the God hates fag people would just go away.
Sure.
He says, because what we're talking about is not hate. Mm-hmm. We're talking about love. I think it's something like that that he says in the film. And so, yeah, we can all interpret it how, you know, from our own perspective in terms of how his approach really is. You know, some would say that in order to love gays and lesbians, you need to throw away all those parts of scripture. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that would be a way of showing love to the gay and lesbian community. And other voices in the church would say that you can't throw those things away. They're too important to our history and who we are and our mm-hmm. roots. You don't just throw away the history, but how do you then reach out in love to people, okay, that may mm-hmm. be different than you are? So there's a lot of different, you know, love is a weird word in that sense because people use it, you know, some people, you know, and honestly, when I asked the Phelps folks, the God Hates Fags folks, I asked them, what about loving your neighbor as yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And the response was basically, this is how we show love to our neighbor.
Wow. Well, I hope they don't love me too much.
No one is telling people that they are going to hell. And we love them so much that we are going to tell them that if they do not repent, they're going to go to hell.
Them okay. and Velveeta.
So the love aspect, that word is defined in so many different ways within our society right now. What is love? What is love? You know, we could probably write out a list of 100 things that we think love is. And if we each did that, we may only have a few that match up. You know, So,
well, we can talk about love in a minute, but this is one of those moments where I'm supposed to break so we can talk about underwriting.
We love that, too, because it doesn't happen without it,
right? We love that we have a radio station. So I'm going to take a break for a second, and we'll be right back. So we're back on the air with Straight Talk. My guest is Kent Williamson, who's the Paladin Media Group.
Paladin Media Group. Paladin Pictures is our film unit, okay? Paladin Media Group is the broader group.
And we are talking about stained glass windows.
Rainbows. Yeah. Everybody does that.
Which is a film about the sort of raging bonfire between the LGBT community and the conservative Christian community. So I have to say, I want to talk to you for a second about how it came to be that you are on this show. So I'm in my office one day and I get an email from a friend who basically says, oh, you know, this would be a really good guy to talk to. Here's this neat film, right? And so I'm like, okay, well, I'll send the guy an email. So I emailed you. And then you left me a message and you said, you know, yes, I'll do your show and I have to tell you something crazy. Right. So I called you back and I'm like, this will be like the 15th craziest thing I've heard today, but you know, shoot. And you told me that I'm in the film.
Yes. I figured I better break that to you before you watched it.
I watched it last night. And you know, what the footage that's in the film is the very first time that a group of the LGBT community folks in Charlottesville went to the Charlottesville Circuit Court Clerk's office to request marriage licenses.
On Valentine's Day.
Yes, it was Valentine's Day. And the clerk at that time was Paul Garrett. It was really kind of fun to see that footage. I had totally forgotten that you guys were there. I think I remember talking to you at uh-huh. some point. I think you wanted me to be interviewed, and you showed me a release or something, and I was like, I'm not going to sign this.
You're like, you're a lawyer. I'm not going to sign a release.
I'm not going to sign that. But you know, if you want to come, you know, shoot the event in the clerk's office, you and every other local TV
station.
So
right.
You know, knock yourself out.
So that was before gay marriage was legalized in Virginia, and so you knew going in, you're going to get rejected. You go up to the counter, and in the film, I love this part of the film. You walk up to the counter, and you're so polite, you're so kind, and knowing that you're going to get rejected, and so you ask for your marriage license, and they reply, oh, we're sorry, we can't give you the marriage license, and you're like, well, I hope that I can come back someday and be able to do that, which you've already done.
Yes, that's true. We did.
And
although it was a different clerk by that point, it was Lizelle Duggar.
From what I understand, the first marriage in the Commonwealth.
We think it might have been us. It was either us or a couple in Richmond. They were all happening kind of at the same time.
Right around the same time. So back to that scene, you get rejected. They say, no, we can't give you the marriage license. But you had brought these big red chocolate hearts, you know the boxes of chocolates, and you're passing them out to people, and in the film we say, you know, and they passed out chocolates. And I didn't.
And I'm so sorry about that. I will take you out and buy you a box of chocolate
later. Thank you so much.
If you would like some. Yeah, that was a trippy time. I remember when we were going to when we were planning that. You know, I knew Paul Garrett. I knew the clerk. I knew the staff over there. I knew the sheriff's deputies. I knew the sheriff. You know, and I went to see the sheriff just to basically say, hey, you know, this is what's going to happen on Valentine's Day. Don't freak out. Right. You know, it's not any bad thing, but, you know, you're in charge of courthouse security. And I, you know, I want you to know what's going to happen. And it was Cornelia Johnson, who's African-American female, that was the city sheriff at the time. And she looked at me in her office and she said, should I call the National Guard? And I just looked at her. I was like, no, you shouldn't call the National Guard. We're bringing chocolate. We're not going to burn the place down. And she was like, oh, okay. Or, you know, but it was really kind of a funny thing. And then she told me a story about she's married to a white man and about, you know, the difficulties she had in getting a marriage license when they wanted to get married. Wow. So there was some real connection there. So it was quite a thing to do. But this film has, I mean, in that courthouse clerk's office scene, I see a bunch of people that I know. I mean, you know, I'm there handing the chocolates, but there's like a bunch of other people around who are local folks. So if you were here at that time, you just might be in this movie.
That's right.
And also, there's some footage from the first Charlottesville Pride in the Park.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't want to miss that being the first event in Charlottesville. And now, is that the same park where they're going to, all the statue controversy
that
is?
That statue. You filmed the statue.
Is it Lee?
I think that's Lee.
Lee, yeah.
And he's on his horse, and there's this, you know, there's this lovely, you know, rainbow balloon arch
that is over the
walkway. And you filmed you took a picture of Robert E. Lee, and then you sort of zoomed in on, there's a church steeple with
a cross.
Behind it.
Yeah. So again, tying in all the imagery.
Yeah, and that is the park where right now, you know, there's a lot of debate about whether they're going to take that statue down and what they are going to do with it.
Yeah.
I have to say, I have a certain perverse pleasure in the fact that we have the Pride event in front of Robert Lee Lee's statue. I think that's just appropriate. I also think maybe it needs to not be there. Although the one at the courthouse bothers me more. The fact that we have Jackson on his horse right next to the courthouse is just, so that's just neat. And so one of the people in the movie that is interviewed in Charlottesville, you talked to Tom Donahue.
Yes. Tom's story is pretty powerful in the film.
He was a local guy here who was very invested in helping with HIV/AIDS issues.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells you his story of his own positive.
When he found out that he was HIV positive.
Yeah. And he's telling it to you right there at the Pride Parade. Yeah. And that was pretty heavy. And then there's, you know, you're talking to some of the drag performers, that performed at that first Pride. And one of them is Ro Seminaris, who's my favorite bartender. So it was really a hoot. There's people walking by in the background. I'm like, that's so-and-so. So it's really kind of, it was really kind of neat to see. It's like old home week for you watching those
local clips.
It was really kind of cool.
We also filmed in, you know, we filmed in Orlando. We filmed in Washington, D.C. Obviously, we filmed in Cincinnati. We filmed in New Haven, Connecticut. There's a scene in Pittsburgh. There's a scene in Greenwich Village when I stumbled across the Stonewall Inn. You know, my wife and I went up to New York to go for our anniversary getaway weekend, and we were staying in Greenwich Village, and we walk out and we walk along and I look up and I'm like, wait a minute, this is a Stonewall Inn.
You didn't go there?
I did not go there to find it. No, I went there to go spend the weekend with my wife, you know. And the next thing I know, I'm standing in front of her, like, wait, you know. And she puts up with all kinds of stuff with me. And, you know, it's like, I didn't have a film camera. I just had stills, you know, still camera. So I just took a bunch of stills of it. that we incorporated into the film for that part of the story.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I definitely, you know, recognized that. But I assumed you had gone up there.
Not intentionally.
To film it.
No.
Well, so I want to talk a little bit about the perspective from which your film is made.
Yes.
Because I think you made this film in an effort to sort of bridge a gap. I mean, that's what it feels like. Like what you're trying to do is sort of to get the super conservative Christian people who do not like homosexuals and the homosexuals to talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that. And I thought it was an interesting film. But I will say that, you know, as one of those homosexuals, mm-hmm. I found there to be a lack of a secular perspective in the film.
And definitely there would be a lack of a secular perspective in the sense that it's focusing so much on Christianity.
So I think it wasn't so much a film in which you bridge that gap as which you try
right.
to bridge the gap between the conservative Christians who hate gay people and the Christian gays.
Yeah, that may be a better way to look at it.
I think that's a much more reasonable way to frame what is happening in that
mm-hmm,
movie. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you asked me, when you sort of said, I think you probably saw lots of people you agreed with wholeheartedly in that film,
right.
I was kind of like,
No, because of your secular position.
You know, it assumes, it presumes that Christianity is true or valid somehow
right.
in the film. And so if your perspective is not that, then it's still a very interesting film, but, you know, there are moments in the film where you go, well, wait a minute.
Right, because everyone in the film, and that's the connecting point between all these people, is they all have that faith connection of Christianity. And I'll say they all bring their own version of that faith connection to
sure.
the table. So, you know, and all of them, you know, would probably feel that they have the right version of that. You
sure.
know, that's the challenge with anything like that, is that there are diverse points of view, even within that idea of Christianity. And so they each bring their specific experiences.
And
to,
I think
to the
you
film.
Did a lovely job of treating everyone in that movie with respect. In
Thank
the
you.
Way that you filmed it. And there certainly were very divergent perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it is totally subsumed in Christianity.
Yes.
I mean, that's the premise of the
right.
movie.
Right.
And so,
right.
you know, which was, I hadn't realized when I watched it. So it was interesting. Although I will say, I mean, one of the things in that movie that you talk a lot about the sort of ex-gay ministries, right?
Yes.
And there's several people in the movie who are ex-gays, right?
Yes.
I mean, and one of them is the person you ended up dedicating the movie to. And I don't,
right.
you didn't make the movie with that person in mind to dedicate it
exactly.
to them, but
exactly.
they died.
Yes. But what's interesting is if he were here today, he would not say he's an ex-gay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He would say he's a gay man
mm-hmm.
who his faith was more important than his gay identity.
I have to say, from okay. From an outside perspective, watching that movie, there's no XX gays. You didn't interview
right.
anybody who
right.
had sort of been through that and then said, oh my God, this is terrible.
We do have the interview with Sean Doty, the lead singer of Veil of Ashes, and he says he was in one of those programs, and he says, you know, he said the leaders were all hitting on me, you know, and I realized that didn't work, you know.
Yeah.
So that he that's a guy that at least gave it a try and
That's true.
And then got out of there.
Although, you know, one of the things that has happened, and again, I'm not sure all of the, you know, you were filming this thing over a period of years,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And it's very clear that you finished the filming of it before gay marriage became legalized. So, because
yes.
you're talking in the movie, you say something about, you know, and now gay marriage is, you know, becoming more and more common in various
right.
states,
right?
right?
right.
And of course,
yep.
now, no, it's the law of the land.
Exactly.
But, you know, in watching that, I felt really bad for some of those people, and I
for the ex gays,
yeah, for
right.
the ex gays, and I'm thinking about the you know, the consensus of the psychiatric community and the medical community now, and I shouldn't say consensus, the majority of the medical community says this ex-gay ministry stuff is really destructive and harmful to people.
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion about
them.
That.
And there was nobody in your movie who said, hey, this is really harmful.
Right. And that's not intentional. It's not like something that I said, hey, I need to leave that out. That wasn't the point at all. But what's interesting, you know, oftentimes in the conversations that I had making the film, it's like a lot of the gay people that I would talk to would say, there's no such thing as an ex-gay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's this kind of adamant, I am going to deny that person their point of view and their experience because my thoughts on this are more important than that.
Right.
And what I tried to do in the film is show the validity of each person's perspective. So the ex-gays, if that's their experience, who am I to step up and say, hey, you don't have a real experience. That's not something that's valid.
Sure.
You can't do that, you know?
You can't do that.
That's not possible. You know, and especially now, think about this. Right now, we're going to the transgender issue culturally, okay?
Are you going to make a bathroom film?
No, I'm not making any bathroom movies anytime soon.
I'm envisioning trying to film that.
Yeah. But my point is that everything is about how someone identifies today.
I
feel like a woman today. I need to use the woman's bathroom.
Right.
I feel like a man today. I need to use the man's bathroom.
Right.
Okay. But tomorrow, I mean, if we can swing back and forth that way, if we can choose that restroom we want to attend,
mm-hmm.
can't we choose
whether or not couldn't
someone's experience be valid in a different context, in the ex-gay context, you know? So if we say we can move one way or it's more, if people talk about fluidity of gender.
I'm not saying their experience isn't valid. I'm just saying, you know, you probably should have covered in addition to people who had that experience and it was harmful to them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That would have been a broader
perspective. And I think with the nod to that would be Sean Doty's statement. And,
it was a small enough nod that I didn't notice it.
Rick Alba, the bass player for the Altar Boys, Rick Alba talks about his experience being in there. And he, you know, it was like he got out of there. You know, he wasn't going to do it anymore. The bass player, you know, and so both of those guys both mention it having been in that kind of a situation and said, I can't do that. So it's not there's someone that says it's bad. No one comes out and says reparative therapy is bad or anything like that.
Right.
You know, but again, their experiences speak for themselves.
So we're going to take another break because it's one of those moments where my producer hands me the little note that says we need to take a break at the 40. So we'll be right back. So we're back on the air and we're talking about Stained Glass Rainbows, which is this film that talks about the sort of conservative Christian and really gay Christian divide.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to say, when you were talking with the man in the film who ends up dying is a guy named Jonathan Irvin.
Yes.
And he's from Lynchburg area. And I grew up in Bristol, or part of my childhood in Bristol. And he really reminds me of some people that I knew growing up. And as I watched him, you know, his sort of perspective is, you know, being homosexual is a sin. God has made me homosexual. I'm still homosexual, but I am, you know, spending my life resisting this sin because I have faith in God and I want to go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of, you know, kind of where we are. And I couldn't help but sort of think that perspective is similar in some ways to the idea of original sin, the sort of idea that everyone is made imperfect, right? That everyone is the fact that you're created means that, you know, you're sinful by nature and therefore that you need to be redeemed. And that seems to be kind of what the preacher, there's this one preacher, the theologian, I guess, Robert Gagnon is talking, and he's talking about you don't get a pass. It isn't a, you know, okay, you can be gay. It's sort of like, you know, it is sort of classified with any other kind of sin. And I just found it really sad to watch Jonathan Irvin live with that level of self-loathing and then die that way. It made me really, really sad for him. Did you feel sad about it at all? Or did you feel
sad? You know, I mean, obviously, when anybody loses a friend, Jonathan became a friend of mine in the making of the film. And so there's that sadness of losing somebody that you knew and that you care about. In terms of you know, we all make choices in our lives, and we all find ways that we, you know, and some of us try to tackle this life, and some of us try to get through this life, and some of us are burdened by this life, and each of in our upbringing and all of our experiences weigh on us differently, you know. And you know, for me, I love Jonathan. I think he's a I love his voice in the film.
He sounds like home to me too.
He sounds what?
He sounds like home to me. Yeah. I mean, the way he talked
you back to that part of the country. Yeah. And he's so gentle, he cut hair for a living, and he was at one time was so vibrant and full of life. And then AIDS, you know, we did two interviews with him, and that's one of the differences in the film. Everyone else I only did one interview with.
Right,
but I
noticed that.
I went back to go spend a little bit of time with Jonathan, partly to see what the progression was like, because I knew he had AIDS, and I knew he was, you know, he wasn't trying to take all the medication. You know, it's like he was content with it at a certain level, okay?
In other words, he had AIDS and decided not to take the medicine?
Basically, you know,
because he decided it was God's will that he just
I don't want to put words in his mouth. You know, I don't want to speak on his behalf in that sense. But, you know, I love the scene in the film where he talks about getting the phone call from his doctor and saying, you know, that he's got AIDS. And he describes it as this elevator just falling. Whoosh.
Yes.
All the way down. And that's, you know, that's what happened to his life on that day. And yet his faith was so vibrant and so alive and so real and so powerful. And, you know, so am I sad? I wouldn't say that I'm sad. I'm sad in the loss of a friend. I think Jonathan lived how Jonathan needed to live. And Jonathan died living the way he felt he needed to live. So I see beauty in that.
Well,
okay?
Often tragic things are beautiful.
Exactly, exactly. Often they are. And
I hadn't even realized that he refused to take the medications. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, and I don't know to what extent. Again, I don't know all the details of that, but I know he went downhill pretty quickly at the end.
At some point in the movie, doesn't he say something like, you know, AIDS has been a great blessing in my life?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
And because of it putting him into a closer relationship with his creator.
And I think maybe there's some validity to a perspective outside of that that says, no, take your medicine and live your life and be joyful.
Well,
God didn't put you here to,
you know, there's often discussion within, especially within the kind of conservative Christian realm of, you know, that God will use secular scientists to develop unbelievable cures that can help extend our lives, you know? And so you know, should you participate in that? Well, yeah, you know, a lot of people do. And this life is filled up with all kinds of choices and decisions that we each have to face and we each have to make. And I think Jonathan chose, would I have done what he did? Probably not. But I think he chose the right path for Jonathan.
Well, I just wanted to hug that guy and tell him he wasn't sinful and that he didn't have to die.
Yeah.
That's my secular perspective on that.
Right, right, right.
And so I felt that's how I felt about it. I just felt horrible for him.
Mm-hmm.
But let me turn the discussion for a second. There's a lady in the movie. Lisa Miller makes an appearance.
Yes.
In the movie. Lisa, the Miller Jenkins case. This is the lesbian couple that were in Vermont, and they had a child, and it was Lisa Miller's biological child.
Yes.
But she and her partner were together, and I was this the era of civil unions in Vermont?
Yes, it was civil union in Vermont at the time.
And so together they had this baby, and then Lisa Miller decided that she was going to turn away from the homosexual lifestyle and move to Virginia.
Moved back to Virginia. So they were in Virginia originally. They went to Vermont for the civil union.
Okay.
And then they decided to live there because they could live as a family.
Right.
The baby, I believe the baby was born in Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, Virginia didn't recognize civil unions
right.
at all.
Right.
And so there's a lot of rub. And it went, I believe it went to the Virginia Supreme Court and was rejected. It went to the Vermont Supreme Court. It went to the U.S. Supreme Court, I think, three times, was rejected, I want to say three times, from the U.S. Supreme
Court. It sounds right. What happened was Lisa Miller came back. They broke up. Lisa moved back to Virginia with the baby, and then refused to give Jenkins any kind of visitation with the child.
Right.
And there was a big battle over whether or not Jenkins had any legal right to visitation with the child based on what their status was, which at the time, I mean, that status probably doesn't even exist now. At least it needn't exist as often because now we have gay marriage. But but it was a really hot topic issue at the time, and it's a really tragic story. And what's remarkable to me in this film is that you've got Lisa Miller is there on film, and Lisa Miller took that baby and disappeared out of the country when the court ordered her. The court first said, okay, well, you have to give visitation to the other mom. And she just refused to follow the court orders for years and years and years. And finally they said, okay, you're not a good parent if you don't share your child with the other parent. So we're giving custody
Full custody to the other woman. Yes.
And she up and disappeared. And so she's gone, and we don't know where she is. There's some hint in the film she might be in Nicaragua somewhere.
Somewhere down there.
But there's another woman in the film who is part of the legal team. She's not an attorney.
She's not an attorney, but she was asked, I believe, by Liberty Counsel to go and visit Lisa Miller.
And Liberty Counsel, is that Liberty University?
Liberty Counsel is, I don't know the connection. I believe there is a connection, but it's not... I don't think they would say they're Liberty University, but I think that there is a connection there. But they have offices in Florida, and they have offices, I think, in Lynchburg also.
So Linda Wall goes to talk to Lisa Miller and apparently develops a very close relationship with her. And at some point, she's talking on film in your movie about knowing that Lisa is planning to flee the country with this baby. And, you know, they have secret passwords they're using in their phone conversations about this. Why isn't Linda in jail?
I'm not a legal expert, so I can't answer that.
I mean, there was a Mennonite pastor who we had
helped her flee the country, and he is in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's a 24-month term, or I can't remember the length that he got, but that whole case came.
I sat there last night and watched this film and thought, I'm watching someone confess to a crime on film. That's what I'm watching. And where is she now?
I don't know. I don't know.
Probably in Lynchburg somewhere.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was amazing you got those people to talk to you in that way.
Yeah, yeah. And Linda's story is interesting also. You know, I mean, Linda not only is the connection to Lisa, but the fact that she lived as a lesbian for over a decade.
Yeah, Linda, at the beginning of the film, one of the things that's sort of neat about your film is at the beginning, you know, you don't introduce these people and who they are at the beginning
intentionally.
Of the film. And it's sort of annoying when you first watch it because you're like, I need a name to put with this person. I need a position. Yeah.
I want to know who they are.
And so it's obvious that you're being denied it. Right.
You know. I want to know who they are so I know if I agree with them or not.
Right,
you know,
sure.
That's the thing.
And I thought that was kind of neat.
And I don't put their names up till the very end of the film.
And so there's a number of ex-gays in the film who at the beginning of the film sound like they're gay people. And so, you know, then by the end of the film, they're, you know, very clearly not. And this one of them is helping essentially commit an international kidnapping because of her faith. And that's a wild ride
and
to take your viewer
thing.
On.
Okay, so now here you bring up a real interesting thing because of the faith. And this is where it gets, and from a secular point of view, you know, you may not understand. Faith, people's faith is stronger than the government, stronger than the laws. The commitment to that is bigger than that. It's broader than that. You know, there's a, I've heard it said, you know, that it doesn't, you know, your faith can be strong regardless of what flag flies over your head. Okay. Mm-hmm. So for example, someone could go be in a communist prison somewhere. Their faith could be strong. Someone could go into a capitalist society. Their faith could be strong. So that faith element, the commitment to that, the obligation would be to that, those principles of the faith over the principles of the law of the land.
I get it. And I think that people who are not religious or not conservative Christians have a morality that mm-hmm. perhaps transcends mm-hmm. their government, mm-hmm. right? You know, I mean, this is why maybe your child commits a crime and you help your child escape, right? Why? The government says they've committed a crime, you have to turn them in. Mm-hmm. Well, because your morality says this is your child.
Right. And your love for your kid is
your duty to your child is such. There are all kinds of things like that. I don't think it's just faith that does that.
Right, right.
And I think that the law is sometimes, I think the law is struggling with that. When that particular, it's a crime in Virginia to assist a felon in fleeing, right? Mm-hmm. But there are exceptions in the law for the parents of the felon, right? There are some exceptions for the family members. Or why is that, right? Well, it's because we recognize that that family issue.
So now let me take that a step further. When people talk about their faith family, mm-hmm. okay, there's a connectedness there that believers have with one another that, you know, and I've seen it. It's like, you know, you never met someone, but you get introduced to them and there's this instant connection through your faith. The only thing you may have in common is your faith, and that connectedness can be stronger than lifelong friendships you've had with other people because of that faith connection. So that faith family, and that's not perhaps being discussed in the court system, but there's something that is very valid in that.
That's interesting. I have a hard time imagining that. I mean, I know that I feel a connection, and the more sort of oppressive the situation I'm in, the stronger the connection feels to other gay people, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't. That connection isn't to the extent that I would feel like, well, this person is gay, therefore I feel like I'm closer to them than friends.
Yeah, I've got
to
like them because, right.
No.
Well, and again, because you know, the tenets of homosexuality are not the tenets of Christianity. The tenets of Christianity talk about that love and that bond of relationship that you have with other believers. And it's apples and oranges.
What do you think the tenets of homosexuality
are? I don't know. I just made that up. I thought it sounded cool.
You did kind of make that up. I'm going to call you on it now. You know, what is it?
Well, the tenets are. Seven of them, and they're really neat.
They're all set forth in the gay agenda.
Of course. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk for a second. We don't have too much time left, but I want to talk for a second about there's one ex-gay guy who you are interviewing, and he's not with Exodus, but he's with something that sounds like Exodus. What is it?
Yeah. Okay. So he's with Exchange Ministries.
Exchange.
He was the leader, John Westcott, the leader of Exchange Ministries at the time. He's not the leader any longer, but he was
at the time you were interviewing him. And he ends up, there's this, after I watched the film, you know, he's one of the ones that really gets you in the sort of, you don't know who these people are, right? So when you first see him, he looks like a gay guy. I mean, he clearly looks like a gay guy, right? And I don't know why that is, right? Why is that I think I know what his sexuality is just by looking at him? But you believe that this person is a gay person.
Well, he talks about going to the gay bars and all that stuff.
But, you don't even have to open his mouth, right? You know, and then by the end of the movie, he's, you know, very clearly he's an ex-gay ministry guy, and he's about how, you know, you can overcome this sin of homosexuality, and, you know, he's married, and he, you know, has succeeded in ridding himself of this, or maybe not ridding himself completely of it, although I think he's one of the ones who more is saying that he doesn't feel that way anymore. And I was curious about him, and so I looked him up on the internet after after I watched the film. I was like, hey, who's this guy, right? You know, because I also thought, he looks really familiar. You know, do I know him? Who is, you know? And And there's this interview that Bill Maher does with him. And I asked you about this before we got on the air. There was a show. What was the movie that Maher did?
Religulous.
Yes. Okay. So Bill Maher's a comedian and a sort of a liberal comedian. Mm-hmm. And he does this film where he's talking to that guy. And it's just hysterical. There's a hysterical film clip of them in which they both have these kind of gotcha moments, right? You know, and they embrace at the end of the film and at the end of the little clip. It's like 3 minutes or something. And Bill Maher says, were you kind of, was that a hard on? You know, and the guy's like, oh no, you know, but it was just kind of hysterical. But I wonder when I first saw him on the set, I thought, oh, I didn't make the connection in my head that Exchange was different than Exodus. It just looked like that, but it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, similar type of an organization. There's a number of them that are out there.
Does Exchange still exist?
I believe, yes. Kristen Tremba, who was at the time, she was the leader of One by One Ministries, is now the director of Exchange Ministries.
Because Exodus was the big one.
That was the big one, yes.
And
Alan Chambers and
the people who ran Exodus ended up issuing an apology to the gay community and stopping doing that stuff.
Right.
Why didn't you talk to one of those people?
I tried.
They wouldn't talk to you?
They wouldn't let a documentary crew anywhere near them. Yeah, I tried.
I gotcha. So,
they've been burned too many times, I think, you know, and they
I will say this. When I remember you now while I'm sitting here talking to you, and when I saw that I was in the movie, right, and I remembered I remembered the name Paladin, and when you came up to me and you were like, here's a release, and I remember thinking, you know, I am not signing this, right, you know. But part of what I remember thinking, too, was, oh, this guy's one of them. I thought you were one of them. And you kind of are one of them.
Well, you know,
I'm
trying to love people and care for people.
Well, you know what? I think that is a lovely message and a good note for us to end on. I think that we should both try to love people. And I'm going to buy you some chocolates.
Thank
now.
You.
thank you for coming and talking to me.
Thank
today.
You so much.
You're a brave soul.
I appreciate being on for certain. And, you know, if people want to learn more about the film, it's www.stainglassrainbows.com. They can buy a copy at bigheavencafe.com.
And you can also download this film on
Amazon.
I mean, when we watched it last night, we just went online and we found Paladin Media and I found you and there was a link to the movie. And we ended up just being like, oh, we can just buy it on Amazon.
Yep.
It was like five bucks. And it was fascinating. It was
But you've
really
got a free copy now.
That's right. I have my own DVD copy. Woohoo! My first feature film appearance. It looks like an actual real DVD. It's kind of frightening.
That's amazing.
Look at that. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you again for having me on. Really appreciate the time, and it's great to get to know you a bit.
It's been really cool. You are listening to 94.7 WPVC FM, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. You have been listening to Straight Talk, a local program dealing with law and social justice issues produced right here in Charlottesville by our very own Olivia August. I'm Audrey Hakes, signing off for Straight Talk. Have a great weekend, everybody.
This has been Straight Talk with your host, Audrey Hayes, brought to you by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Production is from Olivia August, engineering Mike Friend. Be sure and listen again next Saturday morning at 10 o'clock for Straight Talk on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.